Okay, we are now fully into the midst of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. We have already Rosh Hashanah and Tzom Gedalia under our belts, and we're heading towards Shabbos Teshuva and Yom Kippur. And perhaps the most important chiyuv that we have of this time, out of all the mitzvos of the season, is the mitzvah of Tshuva, and specifically, as far as Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, the obligation to ask Mechila. And it's really perhaps the only one of the Elul Tishrei mitzvos, and we have many of them, but it's probably the only one where if we fail to do this mitzvah, we're told that the whole thing didn't work. And this is true even more than fasting on Yom Kippur, and even more than the shofar. Apparently, this mitzvah and this aspect of the mitzvah is ma'akev. If we fail to ask mechila, so then if we're not able to accomplish this obligation of getting the forgiveness of those whom we have harmed, so then the Mishnah says in Yuma that Yom Kippur is not mechaper. And what exactly that means is a little bit mysterious. It sounds like on the surface that it means that if I have averos ben adam l'chavero, if I have transgressions against someone else, so then I can't expect that that's going to go away just because I go to a shul on Yom Kippur and I fast and I daven and I do all the other things, that will take care of it. But I have to ask for mechila in order for those averos to be forgiven. But some point out that it sounds like it's even more than that. It's not just that those specific averos I need to get the victim to forgive me, but there is an aspect of ben adam l'makom there as well. So, for example, there are those who note that every avera ben adam l'chavero, by its nature, is also an avera ben adam l'makom, because God told us not to do it. And unless we get his forgiveness, so then, unless we get the victim's forgiveness, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be mochel his chelek. And the truth is, that very idea that it's also an avera ben adam l'makom, that's what could have cut the other way. That I could have thought that, okay, what do I need to ask Mechila? It's not so obvious if the Mishnah hadn't pointed it out. Because maybe I might think, all right, so yes, there's an avera not to hurt so-and-so. But if I commit that avera, so the nature of the transgression is against the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who told me not to do it. And the fact that there's a human being who is the arena in which this is happening doesn't necessarily make that person the bailim, so to speak. Doesn't necessarily make him the person who should be in control of my fate. So the idea that I have to ask Mechila at all maybe would not have been so obvious. You could have thought, okay, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the metzaveh, and therefore he also is the one to whom I should address my tshuva. So the notion that there is a control that's given to the victim is perhaps more of a chiddush than we may otherwise have realized. So here, we're now saying it comes at it from the other end, that yes, he is the bailim, the victim is the bailim, I have to ask him for forgiveness. And unless I get that forgiveness, so then neither half is going to be subject to a kapara. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be mochel his part either. But there are those who go even further, and this is a statement attributed to the Vilna Gaon and others, that when the Mishnah says, Ein Yom HaKippurim Mechaper, it means that the whole package is not going to happen. That Yom Kippur as a whole is not going to achieve its kapara unless I seek the forgiveness of those whom I have hurt, those whom I have offended. So that really requires some explanation. Why should it be that all of Yom Kippur's kapara is going to be tied in on my obtaining mechila from the individuals who I have hurt? So with that in mind, let's try to understand a little bit what exactly it is we're trying to accomplish, and what exactly is the purpose of this whole idea that we need to seek mechila before Yom Kippur. So on the surface, you would probably assume that the idea is that the victim, so to speak, has the right to press charges, like you find in secular law, that there is some degree of control that the victim has because he has a taina against me, has a claim against me. And therefore, if I want to get forgiven on Yom Kippur, I need to get the victim to drop the charges. So perhaps that's the purpose of asking for mechila. So if that's the case, so you could pose the question, what would happen if the victim was mochel without my asking? Which could happen in any number of ways. It could be that, let's say, it's some identifiable offense that I've committed, and the victim makes some kind of public declaration. Let's say he gives an interview about what the experiences he went through, and he said, so-and-so did this to me, but it's okay, I'm mochel, whoever was involved in this problem. So would I still be required to ask him? Or, for example, we have a concept of the Tefillah Zaka that is recited by many before Yom Kippur. It was authored by the Chai Adam, by Avram Dantzig of Vilna, and it contains within it the statement that you're mochel anybody who has offended you. If they owe you money, you're not mochel on that. You're still going to claim the money. Won't get into any Shemitah's Ksafim issues now. But as far as Averos, but Adam L'Chaveros, so that's your mochel. So what if the person who you offended, let's say you're careful to choose your victims, you make sure only to hurt the feelings of people who say the Tefillah Zaka. So would that save you from having to go through the trouble of having to ask for mechila? Or maybe even more susceptible victims to your offense are those who every night when they say Kriya Shema Lamita, so they recite what the Gemara Megillah says, or Zeru would say, that he says every night, I forgive everyone who has offended me. So then maybe that's even better. So choose those people as your victims, because then you really get a quicker kapar, and you don't have to ask at all. So is that the case? So this is something that Poskim discuss, and there are mixed opinions on this, but many assume that it's not enough. That even if you were to know that the individual was mochel you, you still have to ask for the mechila. There's still this process that you have to go through, and you have to seek the mechila actively, even if you know that he's willing to give it. And that's a very fascinating idea. Rebitzla Petterberger, Yitzchak Blaser, who was the Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he was his Talmud both in Musar and in Lamdas. He wrote the Shailos and Shuvas Pri Yitzchak, and also the Sefer Koch Ve'or on Musar. So in the Koch Ve'or, he has a lot to say about Elul and Tishrei and the soul season. So he thinks that this is clear from a Gemara in Yuma, which tells a story about Rav, who was offended by a butcher. And when Yom Kippur was approaching, so he made himself available so that the butcher would be able to ask for mechila. And that is interesting because apparently he was ready to be mochel. So then why did he have to go through the trouble of making himself available? Why didn't he just send out a memo saying, okay, I mochel you, and you should just know that? Why does he have to wait for the individual who offended him to come ask him for mechila? In fact, if you know the Gemara, the story didn't end so well. So this notion of making himself available instead of just issuing the mechila is interesting. Now, as far as the availability, sort of, Itzla points out that this was a kiyum in Vahalachta Bedrachav, that he was being godlike in making himself available, because that's the whole notion that we have now of the Aser Shemei Tshuva. We say, the pasuk says, Dirshu Es Hashem Bihimotso, that we should seek out God when he is found, when he is available. And the Gemara says, Elu Aseres Hayamim Shebein Rosh Hashanah L'Yom HaKippurim, that during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, we have this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes himself particularly available to us so that we can do tshuva. So Rav making himself available was perhaps fulfilling Valachta Bedrachav, but it still poses the question of why was that necessary? Why didn't he just save time and heartache, as you see from the story? Could have just said, okay, I'm mochel, and there's no need to come. So some posts can point to this story, and they suggest that this shows that there is actually a chiyuv to ask mechila, and it's not just about getting the mechila. So if the idea was that the victim has a claim against you, that he could press charges, and you need to get him to drop the charges, so then it should be enough if he drops the charges without you asking. So the fact that there's still a need to ask, that's something that's itself interesting. It's also noteworthy that why should we associate this with Yom Kippur specifically? If the idea is that you hurt somebody's feelings and you need to get them to drop the charges, so then that should be true whenever it happens. Why is this specifically associated with Yom Kippur? That's also something that the Sfarim try to figure out, really these two questions. Why is it that there should be a need to ask for mechila as a crucial part of the tshuva process? Why does it happen specifically in conjunction with Yom Kippur? And also, what's the story that it's going to apply even if the victim is known to have issued a mechila, a general mechila or a specific mechila? So what exactly is the need here? So it could be, it's likely the case, that there's more to it, that it's not just that you need to get the charges dropped, but that there's an additional goal or goals in asking for mechila as well. So one possibility is that it has to do with as much the process as the result, that it's not just about obtaining some kind of verbal release, some kind of waiver of claims, but it's also about the very act of asking for mechila. And there are a number of indications that that's true. There's a joke they tell about yeshiva guys, that yeshiva guys know that if they put sugar in their coffee and they stir the sugar into the coffee, that it makes the coffee sweeter. But the yeshiva guy is not sure what is it that actually makes the coffee sweeter. Is it the coffee? Is it the sugar that makes the coffee sweeter? Or maybe it's actually the stirring. And the sugar is just there as a siman that you know when the sugar dissolves, you know that you have stirred enough. So there's a very similar chakira, so to speak, that can be raised regarding this act of bakashas mechila. So what really is the magic here? Is it the mechila that you obtain? Or maybe it's not so much the mechila, it's the stirring, it's the process of asking for the mechila that is going to achieve the goal. So if that's the case, so what exactly is the goal? So one possibility is that it's to understand that there's a certain degree of submission and perhaps humiliation, for lack of a better word, that is involved, and maybe that's productive to the tshuva process. The Gemara has the language in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara says that kol ha'oser dvar aveira u'misbayesh, if somebody commits some kind of an aveira and he's embarrassed about it, mochlim lo, he is forgiven, so far so good, that we can understand. But the Gemara continues to say, mochlim lo, sorry, mochlim lo al kol avonosav, he is forgiven for all of his aveiras. So that seems a bit much. We could understand why somebody should be forgiven if he is embarrassed about a specific aveira. Okay, so that's an act of tshuva for that aveira. It's an act of regret. We know that regret is a major component of the tshuva process. So if the person is embarrassed, so we can understand why that should be a kapara for that aver. But the idea that it's a kapara for everything, so that's a little surprising. So Rabbi Shlomo Werman, Zichron Levrach, in one of his farim, he suggested, based on this gemara, that the point is that this submissiveness, so to speak, is a part of the tshuva process, and by asking for mechila, so you're submitting yourself to this process, so that's what brings about the kapara. So it's not just the idea that you're obtaining a mechila, but it's going through the process of asking for the mechila. So it's true in general that embarrassment is considered to be a kapara, and that has its own ramifications. They say in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhiner that when the Mishnah says in Kiddushin that Tov Shabarofim Legehenim, that mysterious line that's so challenging to understand. What does that mean, that the doctors are associated with Gehenim, the best of the doctors? So he suggested what it means, a reference to a spiritual refuah, that the best spiritual refuah you can get is to be embarrassed, because that will take away all your averus. That's the best kapara. But who could administer such a refuah? It's a terrible avera to embarrass someone. So therefore, the only person who would be able to apply that refuah would be Lugahanim, would be committing a terrible averus. They thought that's what it means. It's a reference to the idea that to be embarrassed is a very effective kaparis. That's true in a general sense. But presumably, it's also true more specifically as relates to whatever averus we're talking about. But you could also understand that, especially when it comes to an avera ben adam l'chaverom, so the whole idea that the avera happened in the first place, the whole fact that somebody was able to offend another person, so that happens because they consider themselves somewhat superior to the other person, or they don't really factor in the feelings or the individuality of the other person. So it's understandable that now to kind of reverse that dynamic and to say that, okay, I recognize that you are in control of my fate, that I didn't care at all what you thought last week when I treated you so disrespectfully, but now I recognize that you're in control of what happens to me, and I need to ask you to forgive me. So that is a very effective antidote to the attitude that led to the avera in the first place. And we could understand how there could be a kapara that's associated with that. So if that's the case, that it's about the process, so there are a few dinim that may explain that, or that may be explained by that. So for example, is a din brought in Shulchan Aruch that you have to keep seeking mechila even if you get rejected. So if you ask mechila and the victim is not willing, so then you have to ask again. And if that doesn't work, so you ask again. And if you ask three times and you don't get mechila, so then you've done your part. So then you're off the hook. Now, first of all, just to clarify, so it's not like we assume in elementary school when we first learn this halacha as children, and we think that, okay, say, mochumi, no, okay, it's your problem. So it's not like that, the rapid fire, saying the thing three times, like Atar Sadarim, Akol Mochloch, Akol Moch, it's not like that. But rather, it means three separate attempts, and presumably should be three different approaches, that if the first one didn't work, so you try a different way to approach the victim and ask for mechila. But if you go through three sincere, distinct attempts, and the person's still not mochi you, so then, okay, you're off the hook. Now, that's a very hard idea to understand, because let's say the teenager wants to borrow his father's car. So he says, can I please borrow the car? The father says, no way, not happening. So then he comes back, he asks a second time, really, please, I want to borrow the car. The father says, no, definitely not. And then he asks him a third time. He says, no again. He goes, okay, that's it, I get to take it now. So certainly we wouldn't say that that's the case, and quite the opposite, that the repeated asking is itself presumably an act of lo sachmur in that area, to pressure somebody to say yes. It certainly doesn't become a yes if they say no enough times. If anything, the asking itself is a problem. So how come here we're saying that if you ask three times and you don't get the answer you're looking for, so then that would be enough of a process? So presumably that's the answer, that last word, that if we say it's about the process rather than the result, it's about the stirring rather than the sugar, so then maybe we could understand it, that the goal is there is a process of tshuva which requires you to ask the forgiveness of the victim, and it's that asking that is itself what's creating the tshuva. So ideally, you'll do it in an effective way, and you'll receive the mechila. But if you don't get the mechila, but you have gone through the process in a sincere way, which is a major if, and that's something we'll try to come back to before we close tonight. So if you did go through the process sincerely and did everything that's necessary, and the victim is just refusing to forgive in a situation where otherwise it would be reasonable to forgive, so then you could say that, okay, you've gone through the process, and that's what the Mishnah is getting at. And the idea that there is a focus on this process and perhaps some degree of embarrassment or submission that comes with it, so that could be relevant to a few other questions. One question that has kind of a modern spin to it, but really is not a new shaila. I remember a few years ago, one of the Jewish newspapers around this time of year had a cover story saying, could you ask Mechila by email? So it makes it sound like a modern question, but it's not a new issue. The earlier poskim discussed whether just regular letters, is that enough as an effective tool to ask for mechila, or in a related sense, if you were to send a shaliach, if you would send a messenger to go ask for forgiveness for you, so does that work? So the issue that connects all these things is the assumption that when you were to ask with a letter or through a third party, so you're not actually confronting the person. So the aspect of some degree of submission or of humbling yourself isn't there to the same degree. And it's interesting also to make it more modern. So Shari Turkel, who's written a number of books about technology and how people relate to each other, she wrote a book called Alone Together. It's very relevant to some of these themes. So she writes there about a study that was done of high school girls, and they responded for the most part that when they get into a fight with one of their friends and there's an apology over a text message, they feel that it's not really sufficient. They feel that it's an easy way out, that there isn't a real confrontation that happens through text messages, and it's just not the same. It's not the same as a face-to-face apology. So this reflects this idea that the earlier post can talk about in terms of regular letters or in terms of messengers, that if you don't have that actual face-to-face interaction, so then it may not really be sufficient as far as what we're looking for mechila. Now, of course, it makes sense that sometimes this will be the best way to get to that step. And also, I think probably everyone would agree, it's safe to assume that if it's really not feasible for you to have a face-to-face interaction, maybe it's literally not possible, or maybe it's just something emotionally you can't bring yourself to do, or especially if it's for the good of the victim, that if the victim is not going to be well served by having a face-to-face interaction. So I think everyone would agree that using a letter or a text or an email or a shaliach or any of these venues is better than nothing. It's hard to imagine anyone would disagree with that. And all the more so if it's a step to get you to that next point. So sometimes it's too daunting to try to connect face-to-face, but if you first send a letter or an intermediary, so then you'll find out if you can actually connect face-to-face. So certainly that, it's hard to imagine that being any objection to, and even if that's all it is, but that's all that's possible, so it's hard to imagine anyone disagreeing that it's not better than nothing. But the idea that it's not a complete confrontation that has this goal of bringing about the process that leads to a kapara, so I think we could understand where that's coming from. You see, David posted a question here. Is this a drabanan or clarifying a Torah law? So it seems like what we're talking about here is the details of how it works. We know that tshuva is certainly a din mina Torah, although the truth is there's a lot to discuss about the nature of tshuva as a mitzvah, but I think it's reasonable to assume there is a mitzvah of tshuva, and it was indicated by psukim in last week's parasha, in Parashas Nitzavim. And also the notion of lefnei Hashem titaru, which the Mishnah cites, that you can't go into Yom Kippur without a full tara, and that this is a part of the process. So all of this seems to be the details of what is a fulfillment of a din mina Torah, not just a din mina Torah, but really a prerequisite to making it through this time of year in the way that we need to. So it's in that sense, it would seem like it's very much these steps in order to fulfill a din min ha-Torah. So this notion that...
I'm sorry, I just want to clarify. Sure. I was saying this idea, you have to ask someone else or bring other people into the equation. Meaning, if the goal is a therapeutic process where you're fixing yourself, obviously, like in psychology, that's going to take different forms for different people.
Yeah.
But here, we're making a very specific model that everyone has to follow.
So, right.
You know, is that something the rabbis just bolted on and said, you know, there's this idea of tshuva, but we want everyone to do it in this way?
Well, what we're seeing here is that when it involves an aver ben adam lechavero, so we have multiple aspects here, and we haven't yet seen all of them. We've so far gone through two, but for one reason or another, it seems that becomes a crucial part, no matter who you are, whatever it is that the internal process you need to go through. But to have some process of appealing to the victim, although there are caveats and distinctions and differences, but that seems to be, the Mishnah is telling us, a basic part of the process. And what we're identifying here is different reasons why that is. So first we saw that maybe there's a certain claim the victim has on you, so you're going to need the victim to drop the claim. So that seems to be pretty much a given of any interpersonal avera. But we also saw that that doesn't seem to be enough. So even if the claim was dropped, but you haven't asked for it to be dropped, that there's still more to do. So why should that be? So that's where we're also seeing that maybe it's because there is a process. And it's true, yes, people have different needs as far as what's going to help change their mindset and their sensitivity. But there is a huge sadashavi here that if you were inconsiderate of a person's personal needs and also perhaps even disrespectful of who they are overall. So recognizing now that your fate is in their hands is a significant reversal of that. So that idea that this is all a part of that process may also reflect that. And this could also relate to the idea that you find already in earlier sources of if the victim is no longer alive, so a notion of gathering a minion together and going to the kever and asking for mechila there. So the role of a minion is interesting because not something you normally need when you ask for mechila. So some suggest that's to evoke the Shechina. But it's also very possible that that's about making a public declaration because you have to replace the idea of submitting yourself to the victim. So if he's not able to really interact with you and respond, so instead to publicize it is perhaps an alternate route to get to that idea.
Right, but to your original point, Rabbi, your original point was you could say the whole thing's between you and God and you happen to be going out to people. So I agree with you. That's what the Mishnah and Gemara are saying.
But yeah.
I'm just trying to understand the Mishnah and the Gemara. Are they coming from a perspective of that's how it was intuitive, and that's exactly what the Torah directive is, or they're, you know, adding to the Torah directive?
So we can only speculate, but we know this is what Chazal tell us that there is a necessary step here that this has to take place. So we're trying to figure out what it is that's accomplished that necessary step. So it seems to be it's a combination of all these parts. And the idea of gathering a minion, you find also, even if the victim is alive, but you're not able to get the mechila from them, so somewhat in the spirit of that idea of asking three times, so you find this also in earlier Sfarim of a notion of a person coming in front of the public and saying, I have sinned against that individual and I regret it, that also may be a route of achieving this level of kapara. Now, of course, also, like we said before, and we'll come back a little bit more about this, so if by doing that you're going to embarrass the victim or cause them greater pain, so then I think it should be pretty clear that it's not a path to take, and that the needs of the victim to not suffer further is going to be the highest priority. But to the extent that it's possible or reasonable to do that without causing any further problems, so then perhaps that's the logic to it. And that all gets us to the third possibility. That there is another idea here, which may also be relevant. And this is a notion that's alluded to in Chazal. There's a statement in the Pirkei de Blazer that says that the angels who advocate on our behalf around Yom Kippur time, so they say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should forgive these people and you should forgive the Jews. Look how angelic they are. Look how awesome they are. And among their angelic qualities. Here, they're not eating or drinking. They're not even acting like human beings on Yom Kippur. And just like angels, they don't have any machlokus between them. They don't have any rifts between them. So it sounds like from that, that a major part of the kapara process is that there should be achdus, that there should be shalom among the people, and that that's a tanai for Yom Kippur to be mechaper, which is a notion that you find in a number of places in Chazal, that Kadosh Baruch Hu looks for us to be ba'aguda achas, looks for us to have a sense of unity for Yom Kippur to be effective. And if that's the case, so then maybe the notion of asking for mechila is about fixing the rift. If there has been a break that's been created through our behavior, and that's getting in the way of unity, so therefore for Yom Kippur to be mechaper, so we have to achieve that reconnection. And there are a number of indications that that's true. The Chasam Sofer writes in his drashas an interesting statement. He says that Bezman HaMikdash, there was less of a need for Bakashas Mechila because the Beis HaMikdash itself brought everybody together. But in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash to be a uniting force, so then Mechila takes on a greater importance. So that idea that it's about bringing people together and fixing the rifts could be expressed through that and a few other indications as well. So, for example, some point out that the obligation of asking for forgiveness actually comes up in the Mishnah twice in slightly different language, or maybe significantly different language. We've been talking about the source from Yom Kippur, from the Mishnah in Yoma. It's also a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, that the Mishnah says that if you damage somebody's property, so then you have to pay them back, you have to compensate them for the damage, and you also have to ask for mechila. But the language is actually different. We've been kind of glossing over it by speaking in English the whole time, but the language in Bava Kamma is actually yivakesh mechila, and the language in Yuma is actually yirotzes chavero. So maybe they refer to two different aspects here, and they're both necessary, that asking for mechila in the Bava Kamma sense has to do with you hurt somebody and they have a claim against you. So in order to get them to drop the claim, you have to ask for forgiveness. They should drop the taina. But there's also a notion that there's a rift between you. And the language of Yom Kippur is Achi Yiratzes Chavero, or Achi Yifayis Chavero. You also find that you have to appease the person. So it's not just about asking them to drop a claim, it's about fixing whatever space there is, whatever division there is between people. And that could also explain why that language is specifically in the context of Yom Kippur, as we said before, and why it may even make sense to wait to Yom Kippur, that even the Aveira took place earlier. But sometimes it can be, as the expression goes, too soon. It's too soon to try to ask for healing. And there needs to be more of a process. So it's not always the immediate step, but it's something that eventually has to happen and should happen before Yom Kippur, since Yom Kippur requires such a reconnection. So in connection with that specifically, we have this notion not just of asking for a drop of claims, but seeking a actual reconciliation. And that affects a number of things, including the fact that we find, and there are a couple of proofs to this, that the obligation to seek this mechila correlates not to the avera as much as to the offense. So if you do what might be counted as a minor avera, but it really hurts somebody's feelings, so then the obligation of asking mechila is significant. While if you do something, an avera ben adam l'chavero, but it's something the other person doesn't really register with them, it doesn't really hurt their feelings, they're not upset about it, so then there may be a minimal obligation for asking mechila. So the notion that the mechila correlates specifically to how upset the other person is a interesting idea, and that's also a part of it. It's probably also relevant to this, and this is a much longer story. We'll just allude to it. It's really a subject in and of itself. And if you want to read more about it, so I wrote about this, and it was excerpted in the Why You To Go. So if you have the Why You To Go for the Yom Tovim, if you don't, you can download it. But even that is much less than what you could say. There's much more to say about this topic. We'll just talk about it very briefly. There is a much publicized machlokas between Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim that ostensibly is about asking for mechila if you did an aveira the other person doesn't know about. The usual context would be that you spoke Lashon Hara about them and they're not aware that you spoke Lashon Hara about them. So is there a goal of telling them about what they wouldn't otherwise know in order to obtain mechila? And it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim that yes, you'd have to do that anyway, that even if they don't know about it, you have to ask Mechila. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's reaction, as recorded in other Svarim, was, God forbid, how could you do that? As an Isser of Onas Devarim, you're not allowed to hurt somebody's feelings, and you're going to commit Onas Devarim in order to clear your chest, in order to get the person to forgive you. That doesn't seem permissible, and according to the story, it's hard to know exactly the facts here, but according to the story, Rabbi Yisrael declined to give a haskama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim because of that one psak. And there were those who said to him that, why don't you just write the haskama anyway? And so why don't you just write the haskama anyway? And you will... So why don't you write the haskama anyway? And you'll put a little footnote in the Haskama saying that on page 372, on page 372, there's a ruling I disagree with. So Rabbi Yisrael's response was reportedly, nobody reads the Haskamas anyway, so they'll just see my letterhead and they'll think I agree with everything, and Chalila, they shouldn't think I agree with this. Now, again, is the story true? I don't know, but one clue I did stumble upon, which may indicate the other way, is that we mentioned before, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, how he was the Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So he also was a tremendous Gaon in Lumdus. He was a Talmud of his in that sense also. And he wrote a Chashuva Sefer Shailos and Tshuvos called the Tshuvos Pri Yitzchak. So I happened to notice that in the Hakdama to the Pri Yitzchak, so Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser writes that he thanks everybody who helped him, and he thanks his great Rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael of Salant. And he adds there that even though I don't have a haskama from him, because his darach wasn't to write haskamas. So if that's the case, if even Rebitzel Petterberger didn't have a haskama from him, so maybe there's no haskama, so maybe that's really the story, but who knows. But in any event, the story is that he refused to give a haskama for this reason. And that's a very significant machlokas. Now, it should be pointed out that the Chafetz Chaim did state explicitly that he doesn't think you should inform somebody of every piece of Lashon Hara that you ever said about them. He means specifically that it was something that actually brought about some damage. You actually hurt the person by speaking about them, and therefore there's a real need to address it. But in any event, on the surface, there was this machlokas, and many assumed that the halacha is like Rabbi Yisrael, that you should not ask for mechila if it requires you to tell the victim about something that they wouldn't otherwise know. They'd be blissfully ignorant, so then better not to ask for mechila. So it could be that this whole machlokas could be explained by a few ways, but one way might be it has to do with the nature of mechila. So is it about asking for a release of claims? Is that the whole purpose? In which case, maybe somebody could think that even if it means it's going to be a difficult conversation, but maybe it's kedai to do anyway because you need to have the claim dropped. While It could also be that the purpose of asking for mechila is to fix the rift between people. So if it's going to create a bigger rift, if right now the guy's blissfully ignorant, doesn't have any taina on you, and you're going to tell him about this, and he's going to be devastated, and it's going to be now a big problem to reconnect in a meaningful way, so then you could all the more so understand why asking mechila here might be counterproductive. So that there's a lot to ponder, and there's a lot written about, and what exactly should the approach be? So again, this is a very significant literature, just trying to touch upon very briefly. So there are those who claim that there's just no place for mechila here, and you've gone as far as you can, and it would go further in the wrong direction to ask for mechila and cause a problem. Rasha Weiss, the way he expresses it, I asked him about this once, and then I saw that he has it in his sefer on Vayikra al Torah, that he says he basically thinks they're both wrong, because he thinks that the Chafetz Chaim is wrong and that you shouldn't ask for mechila in such a case. But he thinks Rabbi Yisrael is wrong also, because the implication of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's comment, it's important to emphasize, it's not a kula. He's not saying you're exempt from mechila. He's saying that you're stuck. He's saying that you can't get forgiven because you can't do what it takes to get the mechila, because that itself would be a bigger avera. So basically you're stuck, and that's why Lashon Hara is a good avera to skip, because an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You can't do mechila. There's a lot of reasons why it's not so easy to do tshuva for Lashon Hara, but this would be one of them. So his position apparently is not a kula, it's a chumra, saying that you're stuck, that you need mechila but you can't get it. So the way Vasher expressed it is he thinks that they're both incorrect, because the Chafetz Chaim, he wouldn't agree with that you should ask mechila in such a case. But he also wouldn't take Rabbi Yisrael's position that therefore you're stuck unforgiven, but rather this itself is as far as you can go, and the Teshuva process requires you go as far as you can go, and you can't go further than that, so that's appropriate. That's what you need. There are others who suggest other ways. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik wrote that you should try to undo it with good information. Of course, that's easier said than said, but that's theoretically a possibility. And many suggested that here's an opportunity you can take advantage of something that otherwise is not so ideal. It's kind of a b'dieved, but maybe it helps us here, that I mentioned before elementary school and our somewhat immature attitudes about asking mechila. So really the din is, when you ask mechila, you're supposed to specify what it is that you did wrong. And on Erev Yom Kippur, we kind of all run around on autopilot saying, Yemochemi, 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 without any real substance behind it. So that's really not adequate as far as what the Sfarim describe for the process of Mechila. And certainly, in light of what we've said so far tonight, we can also understand why that's really not enough. But the fact that that exists as a social reality, so that can help us here, because if you need to obtain mechila, but you're not able to spell out what you did, so there are some who suggest that that might be the best alternative, that on Erev Yom Kippur, so you go to the person, you say, I hope you're mochel me for anything I may have done to you, and that general mechila, as not ideal as it is, maybe it's the best etza as far as this is concerned. Of course, it's only going to work if you do it on Erev Yom Kippur. If you make fun of somebody on Purim when they're not there, and then on Shushan Purim you go and you ask them for a general mechila, they'll probably figure out that something happened on Purim. But on Erev Yom Kippur, so it's more of an opening. It happens to be, so you mentioned before, Rabbi Yitzchak Glazer, so in the there is an exchange of letters that was printed in another sefer between Rabbi Yitzchak Glazer and from Naftali Amsterdam, who was another one of the top Talmudim of Rasul Salanter. He was very chashuv. Also, the road that YU was on, the street that YU was on, is named after him, I assume. So Naftali Amsterdam and Rabbi Yitzchak Glazer had an exchange of letters about this. And the question was not about this machlokas between the Rebbe and the Chafetz Chaim. It was about a different iteration of the same question. That basically, Rebbe Tzela said he was moving from one Rabbanus to another, and he was about to leave the town, and he was afraid. Maybe he spoke Lashon Hara about some of his balabatim, or all of his balabatim, and he wasn't sure what to do before leaving, how to get mechila. So the suggestion was, well, okay, but you're leaving anyway, so on your way out, it's kind of understood. You might say, listen, if I did anything to offend you, could you mochel me? So it's kind of similar to Erev Yom Kippur. So there was that same kind of eitzah there, that when there's an opportunity for a general kind of mechila, so maybe to use that as a way of asking for mechila for that which cannot be named, for that which you can't spell out, maybe that's a good opportunity as well. So all of that is all related to this question of what exactly is the goal of asking mechila. Is the purpose to get claims dropped, or is the purpose to go through a humbling process? Or maybe it is to make shalom, maybe it is to reconnect in a way that helps to address old problems, and maybe that's necessary for the kapara of Yom Kippur. So if it's that last one, we should also add that that makes sense, that it goes in both directions also, that it's something that either party could initiate or could bring about, that the offender is asking for mechila, and the victim, so to speak, could also, first of all, be responsive when the request comes, and maybe even initiate the process. And that's something which, theoretically, is certainly the case, but also, of course, it depends on the circumstances, which is important to point out. But the Mishnah in Bava Kamma, so the Mishnah there says that one should not refuse to be mochel, and the way it's pronounced, the way it's presented in the Bavli and the Rishalmi is different, and that's significant, that in the Bavli it has that somebody who refuses to be mochel is considered cruel, is considered an achzar, because he's not worried about what's going to be the fate of the person who hurt him. But the language in the Yerushalmi is considered to be a chet. It's considered to be some kind of an avera. So that also perhaps indicates that really it goes in both directions. Now, I should also acknowledge that the Talmud Yerushalmi there does say that there are certain averas that you're not expected to forgive. And there it talks about Motzi Shemra. What exactly Motzi Shemra means in Talmudic language is an interesting question. Nowadays we use it to mean slander. Does it mean slander there? Does it mean some other form of Lashon Hara? But what seems to be the point is that the reason you're not obligated to forgive for that is because the harm cannot be so easily fixed, which seems to indicate that there is an expectation that the person apologizing will be able to undo to whatever extent is possible what they did. And if it's not possible, so then that's a reason not to be mochel. So first of all, we could certainly extrapolate to other things, not necessarily only about Motzi Shemra, but to recognize that there are some averos where it may be unreasonable and maybe not even proper to be mochel if there is a lingering effect. At the same time, so the Aruch HaShulchan and others talk about this, that if we see that the offender is really doing everything that is possible, whatever is in their hands to try to fix it, even if there are still things that he'll never be able to fix, but we see that he's doing everything he can do, so then it is still appropriate to try to be mochel. But again, the scope of what that could include is very vast, and you can't put it all in one brush, but recognizing that there are situations which may be outside the reach of reasonable forgiveness, but at the same time, to whatever extent it is possible and to whatever extent it is reasonable for the victim to be able to acknowledge an effort that's being made by the offender and to grant the mechila. So this is the attitude that Chazal have, and perhaps that also reflects this idea that the purpose of mechila is about bridging the gap and healing the rift, and that's a major theme for Yom Kippur as well. So what emerges for us is that the Mishnah clearly tells us that for Yom Kippur to be effective, we need to ask mechila of those we have offended, and it could be it means that Yom Kippur as a whole is not going to be effective without that. And we saw essentially three approaches as to why that is. One is they may have a claim on you that needs to be dropped in order for you to go further. Two is maybe it's perhaps a part of a process of tshuva, and it's a humbling process that needs to happen in order for the tshuva to be complete. And the third is that maybe Yom Kippur itself requires the unity of Klal Yisrael for it to have its full kapara, and to whatever extent there are holes, there are spaces in that unity, so we need to do what we can in order to try to fix that so that we can have the kind of Yom Kippur that we're hoping for. So we should hopefully all strive for as much hatzlacha in this as possible. Again, out of all the mitzvahs of Elul and Tishrei, this seems to be the one that is the most ma'akev the process more than fasting or shofar or lulav and esrog or sukkah, the one that is the most significant impediment to our accomplishing what we need to on the season is the act of asking mechila. So to whatever extent we're able to fully realize the goals of Chazal in this din, the better off we are, and hopefully we will indeed accomplish as much as we can in this area, and it should be a zchus and a necessary step for us to obtain the mechila and kapara that we need to have a wonderful year afterwards. So I wish you all, in every sense of the word, a gemar chasim b'tova. And next week, so Yom Kippur is on Wednesday, so we won't do this on Wednesday, but we'll figure out, either right before or right after, we'll figure out a different night next week to have a more chabur before Yantif. Either way, so gemar chasim b'tova, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Have a great night.